Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important, to the fastest growing segment of our society, to those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic solutions are corrupt, that most of them are counterproductive, that none of them can be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so, because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's actually caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because its covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, and we'd encourage you to participate in this program, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. And for those listening via the archive, today's report is Dateline Wednesday, February 19th, 2014. I listened to SRN's news, and at the top of the news, they had my least favorite voice, perhaps in the world today, Secretary of State Kerry, pompously giving orders to the Ukrainian political leaders. And he made it sound like they had a choice between peace and violence, peace and dialogue. When, in fact, it's not the leadership of the Ukraine that has turned to violence, but instead those in association with the United States. The most recent conversation between the Undersecretary of State and Kerry's own department, where she said the F-bomb, the European Union, regarding the Ukraine, not even wanting to side with Europe, but wanting to instigate the kind of turmoil that we're seeing here in Ukraine because, well, hard feelings suffer long, I suppose. They want the Ukraine, this riot in the Ukraine, to damage the credibility of Russia. So if there is a perpetrator of the violence internationally, it would be the United States. If there's a country that is trying to do everything in their power to diminish it, it would be the leadership of the Ukraine, and the only financial backer that seems to want to help out, which would be Russia. Now, mind you, the Ukraine is in a fix for the same reason so many countries in the world, including the United States, are essentially bankrupt. They have far too many government dependency programs, and they have become far too dependent on foreign oil. And by overspending and overimporting and underproducing and underworking, the Ukraine is amongst the most bankrupt nations on earth. And so much of this has nothing to do with a choice between integrating with Europe and integrating with Russia. It has all to do with covetous people wanting more and demanding that their government continue to deficit spend to provide it. But the problem is, they're bankrupt. And unlike some nations, like the United States, that can continue just to print money, invent money out of nowhere, to continue and perpetuate the illusion for that to occur in the Ukraine, or it to occur as it is ongoing in Greece, for example, they are beholden to those who are willing to provide them with more heroin in the form of more debt. So I think Mr. Kerry ought to be more careful before he opens his yap, because, as it turns out, it's the United States that is the blight here. Reuters is reporting an Islamic militant group has warned tourists to leave Europe. Egypt. And it has threatened to attack anyone who stays in the country after February 20th, raising the prospect of a new front in the fast-growing insurgency, according to Reuters. What I don't think the Reuters journalist, we'll put that in quotes, understands is that when Islamic terrorism emerged in Egypt, it was perpetrated by Ayman al-Zawahiri, and his goal was to attack tourists. Ayman al-Zawahiri now is the lead spokesperson on behalf of what little is left of al-Qaeda. And so this is not something new. It is something old. The Reuters report continues, the Sinai-based Ansar Bayat al-Maqdis group, which claimed responsibility for the suicide bombing that killed two South Korean tourists and an Egyptian on Sunday, made the statement on an affiliated a Twitter account. Oh, how international and sophisticated of them. Quote, we recommend tourists get out safely before the deadline, read the tweet, written, of course, in English. Islamic militants have killed hundreds of policemen and soldiers, this report reads, since the army deposed Islamist President Mohammed Morsi in July. What they didn't write here is that they one another killed enormous numbers of Egyptians, thousands of them, both prior to, during, and after the coup, but that the only difference since the military coup is that the government troops are no longer shooting rubber bullets. If you want to protest in Egypt now, it will cost you your life. Sisi, the new dictator of Egypt, has his troops firing lead, not rubber. Visitors, they say, in Egypt are to a trickle since Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Sisi deposed Morsi, triggering a bloody crisis. Should you be interested, Ansar Bayat al-Maqdis, much of that should be recognizable to you, even though it's in Arabic, because we have so many Islamic terrorist groups that begin with Ansar. It means friends or supporters. When Mohammed went to Yathrib, today's Medina, after being thrown out of Mecca in shame following the satanic verses, the handful of Meccans that went with him were considered of higher status, and so the Arabs in Yathrib were simply friends and supporters. And so they are, according to the Quran and Hadith, the Ansar. Bayat is, as you would suspect, since Arabic is a derivative of Hebrew, means house. Al-Maqdis is holy. So it's the supporters of the holy house. Now, where do you think the holy house is? Where do you think this Sinai-based Islamic terrorist group is? Has the eye of their rage focused? It happens to be the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa, which is the furthest mosque in the Jerusalem, the Temple Mount. You see, they want to rid what the world refers to as Israel to Jews, so that they can reign supreme and shout Allahu Akbar surrounding Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. Egypt's most active, this group is Egypt's most active Islamist militant organization, according to Wiki. And it has threatened to topple the interim government installed by Sisi. In actuality, that's not their primary goal. In fact, it's not even their secondary goal. Their primary goal is to profit and to become better armed by human trafficking. They not only sell humans, they sell human parts. And they are very good at being bad in this regard. They are also effective at tormenting Israel. They routinely target Israeli population centers for attack. So it is their third goal is to topple Sisi. You see, Islam has no friends. As Yahweh said, they live in hostility with the whole world. One of the bloodiest attacks, this report says, the Ansar, and they're just referring to them by their one element of their name, as if they were the only Islamic terrorist group called Ansar. As remember, there's Ansar Sharia, the Friends of Sharia Law, that killed the American ambassador in Benghazi. Well, it says that Ansar claimed to have detonated a car bomb that killed 16 people at a headquarters in Mansoura on December 24th. Security forces have crushed, according to this article, Mercy's Mohammed Muslim Brotherhood, and yet the Ansar Bayat al-Maqdis has become ever more brazen. Now, there's a lesson there. The lesson is that if you were to eliminate, to crush the leadership of, to steal the finances of, to criminalize an Islamic terrorist organization, as the United States has attempted to do with Al-Qaeda, and as Egypt has done with the Muslim Brotherhood. If you rid it of its money, you rid it of its leadership, if you criminalize it, and if you attack it and kill and incarcerate everyone associated with it, all you will do is create a more brazen and more violent clone. It's what happened in Egypt. It is what has happened with Al-Qaeda. You cannot win a war against fundamentalist religious tyrants, terrorists, with bullets and bombs. Reuters is reporting that 24 people were killed in bomb explosions in the Iraqi capital. This occurred on Monday, including blasts near two Shiite Muslim mosques at a busy bus station, and as well, police and medics said. So here are the Sunni Muslims that America aided and abetted, provided weapons to, under the Awakening program, that are in an open war now. You could call this one now a civil war with the Shiite Muslims that America empowered and gave a shiny new military to. And they find that it is appropriate, in service of their God, to kill one another at their mosques. It is one a hell of a religion. When we return, we'll complete this story, because there's another one that took place today, killing 33 people in Baghdad, as we continue to survey the world, which is falling apart before our witnessing eyes. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. You can participate in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. Yes, on Monday, 24 people were killed in bomb explosions in Iraq, in areas around Baghdad. This happened to be the Shiite district of Ur in northern Baghdad, which is where the largest of these bombs wrecked its havoc. The article says that no group immediately claimed responsibility for the attacks, because the group is an extraordinarily large group. It represents about 35% of Iraq's population. They are Sunni Muslims. They represent 80% of Muslims worldwide. And they are not the least bit pleased that the United States invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Shiite Islam. And so this is a genuine civil war in which scores of people are dying every day. Now, you know, Kerry was talking about how horrible it was in Ukraine, that the leader of Ukraine is inspiring such violence. And yeah, it's true that in the last few days, 20 people have died. Well, there have been three times that many that have died in the same period of time in Iraq, and we caused it. I spent better part of a year studying all reports in the media of terrorist attacks around the world, beginning in 1960 and running through 2004. Every report of an act of terrorism anywhere in the world, I investigated, read the story behind, chronicled it in what I called an Islamic terrorist timeline. And then I explained who the warring parties were, who killed whom and why. And what I found was quite interesting. It's the antithesis of what America wants the world to think relative to Iraq. But in Iraq, there was no terrorism, no Islamic terrorism. Saddam Hussein was among the most effective rulers in the world in stopping Islamic terrorism. It was non-existent. They didn't even average one minor Islamic terrorist attack a year in Iraq prior to the American invasion. That doesn't make Saddam Hussein a good guy. But in the Islamic world, he was the best leader in terms of minimizing the consequence of this horrible stain of this religion, terrorism. And yet, since the American invasion, not only have over 200,000 Americans died, and yes, I know that the published number is less than 7,000, but they don't want you to consider the 75 to 80 Americans who are taking their lives every day in suicide, having come back from that hellish experience. Nor does America want you to count the 500,000 to a million Iraqis who died as a result of that ill-fated invasion. But there can be no doubt whatsoever that the Iraq that we broke and left in our wake is now a terrorist hellhole. And we are responsible as Americans. Today's report, Dateline Baghdad, a new wave of car bombs ripped through the commercial areas in the Iraqi capital and the area south Tuesday, killing an additional 33 people, wounding dozens more in a coordinated militant assault. The blast came as a firebrand, a Shiite firebrand would mean fundamentalist, outspoken fundamentalist, Shiite cleric, delivered a blistering criticism of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki in a rare televised address. And mind you, that Mr. Maliki governs at the express permission of two Shia leaders. One is the person who delivered this address. He is Muqtada al-Sadr. He was the Muslim who had his Mahdi brigades that were so lethal in killing Americans while American troops were stationed in Iraq. And also the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani, who, like Muqtada al-Sadr, is an Iranian Muslim, very, in fact, identical to the mullahs that control Iran. And he reiterated his earlier declaration that he was retiring from politics. Yes, what he didn't tell you is that in Islam there is no distinction between religion and politics. They are one and the same, just as there is no distinction in Islam between religion and jihad, between the mujahideen. There is no immediate claim of responsibility for the explosives laden in the parked cars. Their targets, which were shopping streets and bus stations, are frequently hit by what they call now the Al-Qaeda breakaway group. So now that the media knows that they can't call the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria an Al-Qaeda-affiliated group, because Al-Qaeda has denounced all affiliation with them, they're a breakaway group. Why not just call them what they are? Muslims. One of the least honorable humans in today's world, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, is on the rampage against both Syria and Russia. He accused the Damascus government on Monday of paralyzing Geneva peace negotiations. What did he want? Capitulation? What did he want? Do you want Assad to show up and say, oh, yeah, you know, I've been a really bad boy, and the assault against my government has been a peaceful uprising by wholly Syrian concerns without any weapons support by outside countries, including the United States. And the thing that I really ought to do is capitulate and give over the country to these fundamentalist Sunni Mujahideen. That would really be in everyone's best interest, including mine. Thank you very much for inviting me to this conference. Surely, that's not what Mr. Kerry thought was going to occur. Now, Russia, of course, denied that they were an obstacle to peace. In fact, the Russians are supplying far fewer arms to the Syrian conflict than is the United States, although the United States is more weaselly about it, and that we supply American weapons via Qatar and Saudi Arabia. U.S. Secretary of State Mr. John Kerry himself said President Bashar al-Assad's government was behind the impasse, aided and abetted by Russians and other allies of Damascus. Quote, the regime has stonewalled. They did nothing except continue to drop barrel bombs on their own people and continue to destroy their own country. And I regret to say they are doing so with increased support from Iran, from Hezbollah, and from Russia. End quote. What a piece of slime. Of course he's killing members of his own country. Of course he's bombing portions of his own country. Because tens of thousands of Islamic jihadists carrying American weapons have invaded his country. Now, I do not like Assad. Bashar al-Assad is an evil man. But the forces that have come against him are far worse. And America is responsible for starting that war. It's kind of like the hypocrisy of Jimmy Carter. And the, I believe it was the 1980 Olympics in Los Angeles, if I have my year right, when he said that, it's the Olympics right before the one in Los Angeles with the Russians when it was in Moscow. And Jimmy Carter saying, we're not going to allow the American Olympic teams to go and compete in Moscow because of the horrible war in Afghanistan. Knowing full well that he, along with Zbigniew Brzezinski, started that war. That the war in Afghanistan against the Russian-backed government was started by Americans, and the opposition was armed by America. It's exactly the same thing that's happening in Syria. Where in Afghanistan, we sent in foreign fighters through Pakistan, and armed jihadists from around the world to bring down that government, jihadist groups that later turned on America. You know, when you aid and abet evil and you turn evil against evil, that snake is likely to turn its head around and bite you. That's what happened in Afghanistan. We didn't learn our lesson, so we're doing it again in Syria. And so knowing full well that it was our invasion of Iraq which gave Iraq to Iran and changed the balance of the power in Syria, that the Syrian war is not a civil war, it's a proxy war, one of America's making, and that the jihadists are coming from around the world, it's not his own people, and that they are equipped with American weapons, this pathetic hypocrite would use this language. We have become repulsive as a nation. Most everything we say is the antithesis of the truth. What Kerry should be saying relative to Syria is, I'm so very sorry. Our invasion of Iraq was a horrible, misguided, counterproductive idea. We made a mess of the region. Our shipments of hundreds of billions of dollars of weapons to the Islamic world was a horrible mistake. And they're savaging hundreds of thousands of people's lives. We need to stop invading countries. We need to stop supplying the world with weapons that are so destructive. We need to get out of this mess. We started the Sunni-Shia proxy war. We are continuing to fuel it. We're guilty. We've made a mistake. We need to learn our lesson. But no. He wants to blame the victim of American malfeasance. Turning to the next story, the worst violence in Ukraine since it gained independence in 1991 erupted in the center of Kiev on Tuesday. If you've seen the pictures, it is a capital ablaze. Authorities reported that at least 20 people, I think it's now 25, have been killed after clashes between anti-government demonstrators and police. And they prompted security forces to attack the opposition encampments on Independence Square. So long as these protesters maintained their unsightly barricades and were just obnoxious, the police left them alone. But when they started burning the Capitol down, when they started looting, when they became essentially urban terrorists, The government responded, now, I don't want to give any credibility to anyone in Ukraine. You know, as I study the history of Ukraine and its grotesque anti-Semitism and its pogrom history, as Putin pointed out to us, where tens of thousands of Jewish women and children were bludgeoned to death by these same people. And when I read their economic history of how they got themselves into this mess of government dependency and a sense of entitlement, I have no sympathy for them. And I have no sympathy for the Russian-associated government that was elected in this place. But I'm going to tell you that there's nothing the world can do to resolve this problem. You've got evil on both sides. The internet broadcasts are horrendous. They are destroying any prospect of a compromise between either side. Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych accused the pro-European opposition leaders on Wednesday of trying to seize power by force after at least 26 people died in the worst violence since the former Soviet Republic gained independence. European Union leaders condemned what they called unjustified use of excessive force by the Ukrainian authorities, although they didn't respond until they were forced to do so. And they were urgently preparing targeted sanctions against those responsible for the crackdown. Oh, that'll fix the problem. You've got a financially bankrupt country and people protesting because the country is bankrupt and they want their entitlements to continue. And now you're going to impose sanctions. That'll work. The only country that seems willing to bail them out, provide equity through more debt, is Russia. The only country providing fuel for the country is Russia. Protesters have been occupying central Kiev for almost 3 months since Yanukovych spurned a far-reaching trade deal with the European Union and accepted a $15 billion Russian bailout because the Russians said, here's $15 billion. You're bankrupt. We understand it. You need a bridge. Here's some hope. The Europeans weren't willing to offer them anything in terms of a loan. So if the question was, what do I accept? $15 billion so that we can continue as an independent country, or an opportunity to perhaps do business if we could get our people to actually work with Europe, even though our express source of fuel is Russia. So I don't know how we're going to propel any of these factories, turn on the lights, fuel our cars, warm our homes. But, you know, those Europeans, they sound really nice, so we'll partner with them and their promises. Well, the sprawling nation of 46 million people with an ailing economy and epidemic corruption is the object of a geopolitical tug-of-war between Moscow and the West. And it's mostly between Moscow and the United States. It's the Cold War Part Two. The recorded and now public conversation between America's Under Secretary of State, where she said, F-bomb the European Union when trying to manipulate Ukrainian politics, made that evidently clear. Well, now, the capital is burning. Russian President Vladimir Putin's spokesman insisted that the Kremlin was sticking to a policy of not intervening in the Ukraine. Let's hope that continues. But if it continues, what you're going to see is more carnage. And if it doesn't continue and the Russians intervene, then what you're going to see is more suppression, but less carnage. Dramatic scenes, my friends, are unfolding around the world during anti-government protests and that are very public in three desperate countries this week. On three entirely different continents. Of course, in Ukraine. But you know, the same thing is happening if you want to look at the pictures in Venezuela. And it has been ongoing now for over 2 or 3 months in Thailand. This is not a one time event in one place in the world. The Ukraine, Venezuela, and Thailand are all experiencing exactly the same kind of riotous protests. Most all of them over economic issues. What people think they're entitled to, which just isn't possible anymore. What we are witnessing, however, is also going on today in Bosnia and in Lebanon. News stories out of both countries. Same kind of events. There are large, serious, ongoing protests and riotous behaviors on a massive scale as we speak in Turkey. They've never gotten control of the uprising in Turkey against the Islamization of that country by Erdogan. They're taking place in Tunisia, as is anyone who dares to confront the Islamic party is murdered. In Libya, which is now a country where all sides, there's not two sides, but all sides are comprised of warring Islamic militant groups. In Egypt, in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, in Bahrain, in Sudan, in Somalia, and we'll continue this list when we return. Yet the world's ablaze in protests, and for us to ignore the fact that these protests are taking place on every continent around the world. It's not only in Ukraine. It's not only in Venezuela. It's not only in Thailand. But it's also ablaze in Turkey, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Bahrain. In fact, all through the United Arab Emirates. Sudan, Somalia, Ethiopia, Kenya, South Africa. The Central African Republic is engaged in a civil war between the Muslims who instigated it and the Christians who are now seeking retribution. Mali, Nigeria. Oh, Nigeria, what a mess. Chechnya, North Korea, and even Macedonia, in addition to those countries that are so prominent, Bosnia and Lebanon, Thailand, Venezuela, and Ukraine. Here's a story out of Bosnia, if you were wondering why I put them in the list. European Union officials told the factions in Bosnia on Tuesday, that would have been yesterday, to heed protesters' demands for more accountability and transparency after the worst bout of civil unrest occurred since the Balkan countries' formation after the 1992 through 1995 war. Protests are over unemployment, graft, and political inertia. It toppled 4 of 10 regional governments in Bosnia's autonomous federation. It's dominated, of course, by Muslim Bosniaks and Roman Catholic Croats. Bosnia is made up of two parts, the federation and the Serb Republic. You know, it's the whole world now seems to be trending towards these divisions. There are religious divisions and there are racial divisions. And you take countries like Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia and you divide them into little bitty pieces that have ethnic racial minorities and now making them a majority of a tiny little country, or religious minorities within countries, and they now have their dominion. It is what the world is coming to because no one wants to get along. As we turn to another one of the countries that is ablaze, we find Lebanon on fire. What the Reuters journalist wants to call an Al-Qaeda-linked Abdullah Azam Brigade. It's actually linked to the refugee camps, which are filled with the Arab Muslims who the world wants to call Palestinians, Abdullah Azam Brigades, claimed a twin bombing attack in Beirut on Wednesday, saying that such attacks would continue until Hezbollah forces withdrew from fighting in Syria and its own fighters were released from Lebanese jails. Well, Hezbollah is not going to withdraw from Syria. Hezbollah and Syria have become integrated. And since the United States empowered Iranian influence through its invasion of Iraq, Hezbollah is a dominant Islamic force, not only in areas throughout Syria with the headquarters in Damascus, but also throughout Lebanon. It's this particular terrorist group is named after a late Islamic sheikh, which means religious leader, Abdullah Azzam. He is what the world has come to call Palestinians. He is from the Jordanian refugee camps. He's a well-known preacher and organizer who was among the first Arabs to volunteer to join the Afghan jihad against the forces of the Soviet Union in the 1980s. In other words, he's an American-made Islamic jihadist because it was the United States that orchestrated the great jihad against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan in the 1980s. Yes, we made this mess. Abdullah, by the way, means a slave to Allah, in case you were curious. The radical Lebanese group, which claimed, and it's not radical, it's a fundamentalist group, this preacher, this Islamic cleric, is a formidable, or was before he was killed, jihadist. I mean, think about that. You know, there's not a whole lot of religions in the world where the religious leaders are militant leaders, where the religious leaders claim to be terrorists, where they are, in fact, jihadist. But it is true of Islam. When we return after the news and commercial break, we'll continue with a few more of these stories, and then we'll turn our attentions to the myth of Christendom prior to, in our final hour, turning to the Torah and coming to embrace what Yahweh had to say about his covenant.